Have you ever wished that you could have a do-over? Have you ever been in a situation that was so convincing that you weren't sure if you were scammed at the end of it? A situation that had such a good outcome that you wouldn't care even if you were scammed? Back in 1998, I was outside the Tsar's Winter Palace in St. Petersburg, Russia. And there were these street vendors. They were selling things like army hats with communist pens in them, Zippo lighters, a really cool flask with a communist insignia. But they were made out of lead, so I'm pretty sure if you drank out of them, you'd get poisoned. One of the lighters caught my eye. It had a fake gold exterior. The vendor saw me eyeing it, and he kept asking me if I wanted to see it. I told him no, and I was just looking, but he was persistent. And he eventually picked it up. He proceeded to fill it with lighter fluid. And as he struck the flint, his whole arm was engulfed in flames. I was shocked. His buddy at the stall patted him down, put it out, and they made a big deal out of it. I felt so bad for the guy, I bought the lighter. I was pretty happy with myself. I felt bad for him, I got him a sale. I was a little flustered. I was walking away, and my dad turns to me and he's like, "Hey, Steve." I'm like, "Yeah, Dad. You think you did that on purpose?" It was at that point I realized I had probably gotten scammed. But I didn't care. I felt so bad for the guy, and the situation was so believable, I was okay with it. I do wish I could have gone back, though, to see if I really was scammed. Today, we're going to talk about what you would do differently if you could start your career over in cybersecurity. We're going to talk with a few different people. They're going to give us their perspective, and I hope you enjoy the show. You are listening to Ephemeral Security. Hello and welcome to the Ephemeral Security Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Stonebreaker. Today, we're going to be talking about what would you do differently if you could start your career over in information security. I also have with me Jason Thorne. Jason?
Thanks, Steve. That's all I got.
And with us, we also have a special guest, Joe South from the Security Unfiltered Podcast, and one mystery guest. We'll see if Jason can guess who this is. The mystery guest has a certification from GIAC, the Global Information Assurance Certification, multiple Splunk certifications. He can hold his breath for more than 1 minute.
Ooh.
He also likes long walks on the beach. It is Shane Armbrister.
Oh, nice.
Hey, guys. How are you? Thanks for having me on, Steve. I'm really excited about this.
I should have known. Damn,
I'm a little disappointed. The holding the breath thing didn't give it away. You know I'm good at that.
I was really expecting somebody we shan't name to be on this call.
I think before we get started, though, we should talk about where Jason's going this weekend. I heard he might be going to Lollapalooza in the middle of the Delta variant. Is that really the plan?
This is true. And to make matters worse, Friday I was at Milwaukee for Foo Fighters as well. So. Yeah, so I'm participating in the Delta, although I was wearing a mask most of the time.
Wow.
That's a small step in the right direction, I suppose.
I'm doing my part. I'm double vaccinated. I went Pfizer and Moderna. I overdid it. No, that's not true.
I was about to be like, maybe I should triple vaccinate. I don't know.
I didn't know that was allowed. I didn't know we could do that.
Didn't I vaccinate you earlier? Nope, wasn't me.
Jeez.
How many times can you check the security checkbox? Like, I got all three vaccinations.
It's defense in depth.
That is defense in depth. I like that.
Applying cybersecurity to your health. That's the way to do
you
it.
You never know.
Yeah.
Mitigate risk. You know, it's all the same. Mitigate risk by going to a Lollapalooza concert.
Well, yeah, I guess you could mitigate it by wearing like double masking or something, right? And then telling everyone to get away and using lots of like...
holding my breath whenever somebody walks around so I just won't breathe for like 4 hours.
Just put on a gas mask or something.
That would work, man. the gas mask can be your wingman.
Man, like, this is the first time I've seen Shane post COVID. Is this true? I think this is.
Yeah, I don't think we're post COVID, sure. Buddy. I think we're right in the middle of it. There's another outbreak.
We're pre-Delta.
It's ramping back up for round for Delta round two.
Yeah. Post round one. We're ready for round two.
So let's get back to the topic at hand. So, Joe, if you could start your career over in information security, what would that look like?
Maybe, Joe, you start with how did your career start?
Ooh, that's a good one. I like that. That's much better.
Man, that's a pretty good one. So I guess right out of college, you know, I landed a help desk job. And so I was doing help desk work. I absolutely hated it. I hated every minute of it. The only thing that I liked about that job was the people I worked with, some of them at least. And that was it. I mean, it was miserable.
Wait, why was it miserable? I feel like there's a story in here.
I just, you know, at the time I hated dealing with people and I hated dealing with customers. Like every time I picked up the phone, it was an emergency. It was customers screaming at me. There was no in between. And it was just like it was like that from day one. It's like, guys, I just learned how to log in 20 minutes ago. Like, what are we doing? You know? And so it was extremely stressful for like no reason. But, you know, the company that I was at didn't have any sort of security team. They didn't have any like real security awareness, especially on our local network and the product that we had, where it was, you know, supposed to be like military certified or whatever. It's JITC certified is what they call it. Even that was kind of a joke as I was finding. So, you know, I kind of just took over the entire vulnerability management process while doing my other work, because I was the one that was going on site to all these different federal customers. And, you know, if you've ever been on site at one of these like black sites.
Wait, what's a black site?
Well, it's basically any site where you have to surrender your ID and you cannot retrieve them until you're allowed to retrieve them.
Oh,
I never heard that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. You have to be like permitted, like, excuse me, sir, can I have my ID back?
Yeah. And so I was going on site to all these places, and at these places, you know, they don't let you on site unless your product is secured, like pretty extensively secured. And so, you know, I'm taking this product that is like JITC certified and this and that, right? Like it has all the right acronyms behind it. And I get there and the guy in charge is like, this isn't anywhere near close to being allowed in our environment. Like not even close.
That sounds embarrassing.
It's not even at.
Is that embarrassing?
It was horrible. It was the worst. I've literally been on the job for 3 months. Like, what do you mean it's at 10%? Like 10% I'm failing or, you know, like what are we talking about here?
You're getting 10% back of your ID card.
Right. Here's one quarter. Have fun.
I'm so junior in my career. I was so junior in my career. I was reading the Security Plus book. Like, you know, like that's where I was in my career. I didn't even have the Security Plus cert.
Just scanning through, you're like, I know it says something about viruses in here. I know it's in here.
Yeah, right? Like, I was like, defense in depth. I wonder, I think we might be lacking that. So, I don't know, maybe choosing a less stressful job to start with would have helped a little bit. It probably would have saved me hair, you know? Like, it would have done that for
me. So, you're saying the reason that maybe you lost your hair was this job?
Well, I mean, there's a couple jobs. That was definitely the beginning of it for sure. And then the one after that, working, you know, 80 plus hours a week every single week with no vacations for my entire tenure there, that really like, you know, put the nail in the coffin. It's like, oh, and I'm not getting a bonus at the end of the year for this. Oh, fuck this. I'm not doing this again.
Brutal. Like, that's miserable.
It was crazy. It was insane.
So trial by fire. Lots of trial by fire, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I didn't have to go through it. I mean, now I guess I'm better for it, but...
Except for the no hair.
It's like, I just feel like... I mean, I feel like it took years off my life, you know?
And so the whole time you just knew there was a better way. Just there's got to be something better.
Yeah, that's why I was just like... At one point, I was just like, I can't do this anymore. I have to leave. Like, I just have to go. And like, they even threw more money at me. They were just like, how much do you want? I'm like, it's not really about the money. I mean, I'd really like to have a life. I mean, my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, you know, we'd be hanging out or whatever, and I'd be working the entire time, like nonstop. And she was like, you know, like, when are we going to spend some time together? And we had like just started dating. I'm like, what do you mean? Like you're hanging out, like watching TV or whatever. I'm getting stuff done. We're here. Like we're good. She's like, no, like we don't even like talk. Like
you can IM
me. We're still getting to know each other.
Shoot me an IM. Oh.
Yeah. Send me an IM or it doesn't matter.
Right next to you. Just send me the IM.
Exactly.
Very cool. So with that kind of being the beginning, then if you could do it all over from scratch, ideally, how would you like it all to go down?
I mean, I would like to start it with the knowledge of knowing that working 80 hours a week isn't going to lead to a promotion. Like it's not going to guarantee you a promotion or a raise, and it's likely going to cause you a lot more stress and heartache than there needs to be. And so if I could put a hard cap on how much time I'm spending like actually like at work doing work related things, I think that would have really helped a lot more.
I feel like there's some lessons in there, like that people that just start in the workforce don't know.
So like really having that work life.
Yeah, because like there's always like the misconception of like, if I just put in 90 hours a week, you know, I'll get a $10,000 bonus at the end of the month or at the end of the year, or, you know, like they're going to give me the money that I deserve for the market rate. And it's like, doesn't really work like that in most cases.
Yeah, that's that sort of thought process. I think I thought that for a while, too, when I was younger. You know, if you work hard, somebody's going to notice it and good things are just going to happen.
That's what all the old people kept telling me. Oh, I don't put in the hours, you know, and you're just like, OK, and you just get screwed.
And you learn there's this thing called politics and
Yeah.
What about technology wise? Is there anything you would have, or even school wise, if you had known that you wanted to do security from the beginning, is there anything school or technology or language wise you would have focused on?
So I got my bachelor's in criminal justice. And then once I realized, like after my bachelor's and was in the job that I was in, once I realized that I wanted to go into security and that it was quite a bit more difficult to get into security than I thought, I got my master's in cybersecurity. And it seemed like once I got like halfway done with that program, it was just like constant phone calls. It was like, yeah, we want you on our team. We want you on our team. We'll give you this much money. Like it was really weird because I had been trying for so long with absolutely no success, like none, you know?
So what changed? Why do you think people started calling?
So I think what changed was that I was at one of the very few programs, probably still is one of the very few programs in the country that the master's program is actually extremely hands-on. So like when you're learning about wireless security, yeah, we're talking about it in a lecture for 2 hours. And then for the next week, you're doing these three labs where you're literally breaking, you know, WPA, WPA2, you're getting around all these different weak protocols and things like that. Like you're actually doing it and you have to prove that you're doing it, you know, by showing the screenshots and things like that. And of course, there's ways to get around it. But if you take advantage of that time and like the situation that you're presented with, you'll really learn it. And so I was able to go on these calls and talk about using a SIM. Talk about using an EDR because I've done it before, right? Talk about wireless security because I've done it before. And I may have only done it in a classroom setting, but I also had to frame it in a way of like, well, I also haven't had the opportunity to do it anything outside of this classroom setting. Like I've tried to do it at my company right now and they literally do not care about security. Like they could care less about security. I've had this conversation with the VP several times. He literally told me to go away. So I think when I was able to show like I'm doing everything I can and I just don't have the proper amount of experience that you want, like that hands-on real world experience, but I have everything else, people were more open to it.
Got it. Yeah, that's like the time. That's like the sign. It's either time to leave or it's time to get other folks involved to make security a priority. Either that or you just like pray for a breach and then you get all the funding you want.
You know, it came down to like me literally working with like one or two developers that kind of knew how to spell security and, you know, to get things done. Like,
that's the first step. You spelled it.
Right.
And to be honest, I think Joe, you hit something on the head there too. Like whenever I do an interview, one of the key questions I usually ask is how serious is security taken here? And one of the best responses I ever got was I was on an interview with an engineer and three managers, and the engineer immediately laughs and goes, ha, great question.
Wow.
And I could just hear on the call all the managers staring daggers into him as they try to walk back on that comment. Because my first thought is like, yep, security is not taken seriously at this place whatsoever.
Oh my God.
Yeah, as soon as you hear that, it's like, see ya.
Yep, that was it. Like right after he answered that, and everybody else tried to like, it's very well taken care of. We're very serious about it. I was like, no, you're not.
We want to check every box.
Yes, that was exactly it.
That's so funny.
Man.
So Shane, do you want to tell us about your foray into information security?
Sure. So first off, I would never work with Jason again.
I'm a career ender.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'm the Black Widow of careers.
Yeah, it's the worst.
Oh God, I'm working with him now.
It doesn't get better.
It gets worse.
He has a mirror on each side of his screen, and it's just used to like do his hair all day. It's crazy.
Do his hair and brush his teeth. That's it. And lift weights in front of it.
My few strands that are still grasping on for dear life.
I thought I was to see behind him, but no, it was really just to look at his hair.
But yeah, no, for me, like getting into cybersecurity was almost more of an accident than anything. Cause I started off working in an operations center for a year and a half. And then I was working on the data warehouse team, and I happened to be doing a lot of Splunk work there. And I was enjoying data warehouse, but it wasn't the most fun I could have been having.
True.
And then the security team reached out to me, and I kind of told the manager, like, I don't have any security experience. He goes, that's fine. I have guys who have security experience. I need somebody who has Splunk experience. And at the time, I had the most Splunk experience in the company.
Splunk is very important in security.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that I got into it early on because I learned so much about it from the early stages, getting to go to the different conferences, and I got to like do a lot of networking with it and just doing so much development. And it's such a great platform. But yeah, so after I was on Data Warehouse for about 8 months, they were looking for a security person because they were standing up Splunk as the new SIM solution. So they ended up hiring me into it. And so I was immediately put on the project to help get it stood up and in place and kind of help get it back on track. So for me, getting into security...
Wait, no, was Splunk always a SIM solution?
No, originally...
I thought, didn't Splunk start out? It was like just logging, right? That was like the thing. It was like, oh, we do logging.
Yeah, the original idea behind Splunk was the developers initially said it's supposed to be Google for logs.
Right.
Like that was supposed to be the whole concept of it. To be honest, they didn't even realize people were using it as a SIM solution until people were like telling them like, oh, this is a great solution for security. Like you can get your logs, you can get alerting off of them. And then they kind of had the idea, oh, well, why don't we just create an entire SIM out of this? So that's where you kind of get Splunk Enterprise Security out of it.
That's awesome.
But yeah, so for me, like kind of getting into security was a very happy accident. And I often told my wife, I fell into the job that I love without knowing it's what I wanted.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Like it's a job that I absolutely love. And like, I love my career. I love the field. Like there's so much to learn and to do with it. But yeah, that was kind of my quick shot into security. And then once I got into security, I ended up working with Jason and a couple other really good people who helped kind of mentor me and help get me up to speed on everything. But I'll still never forget my very first phone call that I got while on call for security after only being in the field for 3 months. They called me and immediately like, hey, this isn't working. What's going on? And I'm just like, I have no idea. I've been in security for all of 3 months. And the whole time I've just been standing up a SIM solution. They're like, you're the security guy. I'm like, I sure am. Yep. That's a good observation.
At least you're honest about it. I hate when people like give you some BS answer or whatever, you know, it's the worst.
Yep.
Hate it. Oh, I hate it.
It's the worst.
It just wastes everybody's time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it when vendors give me BS responses to things. It really gets me going.
I've gotten to the point with vendors where I start asking for patents. I'm like, yeah, send me your patents and then we'll talk. You know, it's like I want to actually read the content of the patent and then we'll talk. Because like they're telling me they're like, oh, it's blockchain and it's AI and next gen. And it's like, send me your patent. And then it's just like, cricket.
Patent? What are we supposed to, nobody's asked that before. What are we supposed to do? I don't know.
But it's on the blockchain.
Like, yeah, it's blockchain. You can go find it there.
So Shane, if you knew way back in the day that you wanted to do security before you even started getting into IT, how do you think you would change things up?
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I fortunately had like a really good...
origin story?
Yes, that's exactly it. I had a fantastic origin story.
Well, then maybe you need to give some suggestions then to people that are thinking about getting into security about how to kind of like deal with like calls, like the one where you got where like you're 3 months in and things like that.
No, Absolutely. So one of the things that I kind of wish I had done sooner was getting more involved in some of the cybersecurity communities. So like joining Reddit groups. So I recently also joined a Discord group that's kind of helping mentor new people who are getting into cybersecurity. So I think those are great things to get involved with. And I really wish I had started doing that earlier on, because it would have helped my career, but also would have let me network on a significantly broader platform where I could reach out to more people, learn from more people, and also like share my experiences. I also think, kind of as you said, Steve, like what other things can I recommend to people? Having the ability to find a good mentor is always great.
Did you find a mentor? Do you have a mentor?
Yeah, I do. Jason. Oh, wait, no, he's not my mentor. No, I mean, when I was working at my first job, yeah, I kind of consider my first mentor a friend of ours, Tom, and he really helped teach me a lot. I learned a lot from him, and just having somebody there to like bounce questions off of was so helpful.
Yeah, Tom was great. He was so passionate about security, where he loved, you know, if we debated things, he would reach out later on and be like, hey, I just want to tell you, I really enjoyed like discussing this and debating this, you know, making each other better. Like, he was super passionate about teaching security and learning security. So those are great mentors.
Awesome.
Yeah. Hmm. I also think like having some kind of administrative level background is also really helpful. So like I ended up doing a lot of like my schoolwork and networking, which has helped carry me really far in my career. Whereas a lot of people that I end up working with are kind of shaky on networking and might know like the operating system better. As a security engineer, it's always good to have a broad spectrum to understand all the different things you have to touch and you have to work with. But I think if you can have some kind of strong administrative background or kind of focus in on something, it's never a bad thing. So then you can kind of learn what baseline normal is for that, the capabilities of that OS, potential vulnerabilities or risk you have to deal with. Plus you get to, you know, monitoring and mitigation, how to work with those easier. And especially if you're doing any kind of vulnerability management program, like I'm sure everybody here knows how hard those are to deal with and how to properly prioritize everything so that you can get it taken care of. So if you can actually provide detailed insight into how to do that, like that's a huge help. And I think the last thing I would also recommend, and it kind of goes back to that point of the phone call that I had, is that it's absolutely okay to say like, I don't know, or I need help with this, or I need to do more research. Like so many times have I heard engineers try and just guess their way through something when they're completely wrong, or it ends up causing more issues. Like it's perfectly okay to be like, you know what? I don't know the answer to that. Let me go see if I can research and find it. Because like that's putting yourself in a safer situation by admitting that, as opposed to just blurting out an answer because it sounds right or feels right.
People appreciate that.
Exactly. Like, and I think that's key. Yeah. Cause so many times I've just like, even during interviews, like I'll ask a question on purpose, knowing that it's hard and somebody shouldn't know the answer, and they just go all the way through it. And at the end, I'm like, okay, it's a good answer. And then I'm just like, okay, yep. No, they don't know how to say, I don't know, or where to get the answers from.
Yeah. That's always the worst. Yeah. Or you ask people like, tell me about a time you failed. They're like, oh, I've never failed. Oh. And it's like, yeah, that's so wrong. That is so wrong.
What's your greatest weakness? My greatest weakness is I have no weakness.
I don't fail. It's
like, tell me about the time you took down Prod. Come on, tell me. Everyone's done it. Tell me.
Everybody's had that stomach sinking moment. What was yours? Nope, not me.
Like, what was your like, oh shit, Prod is down moment? And maybe it was me. Oh, it was me.
Yep, I've definitely had that.
Yeah, there was no debating when I took down Prod. Fingerprints were all over
you
it.
You didn't try to clean up your tracks, no?
No debates. I made it unusable, so.
I got called out in the middle of a phone call while I took down Prod.
Oh, man.
Yeah, they gave me too much access to the VMware.
Was this Shane? Was this you?
They said, who's this ID? And I was like, oh, that's me. They're like, why did you? I was like, I thought it would refresh the page, not restart the entire thing. It was in a virtual environment. I hadn't used VMware Enterprise that often.
Oh, man.
And so I was just like, I saw the refresh button. So I thought it would refresh the status of the machine on the page. Little did I know, it restarted the entire thing.
Wow.
And on the call, everybody's like, okay, well, don't touch it again. I'm like, I won't now that I know.
Don't touch it again.
Yeah.
Never. Like, I threw my mouse in the garbage. Don't worry. Yeah.
I guess that's a role-based access control.
Well, it was at the time, they all said it was either all or nothing, and we needed it for monitoring. So they said, all right, they can have all access. But then I made a point to document like five different spots for my team highlighting this button. Do not touch this at all.
Ever.
No, but VMware's tricky. And I was at a company where we were doing a test failover DR, and the vendor we were working with, they did a full DR. And so prod was down for like the entire day, because once you start the DR process, you can't stop it, like a full DR. And it was like the worst day ever at that company. But it just came down to like one single button. And like there wasn't even like a check or anything. It was just, it was pathetic. VMware can be tricky, man.
Agreed. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's probably my, well, actually, that's probably my second biggest mistake I ever made.
Second biggest? Jesus.
How bad could the first be?
Of the two, the positive is that they were both, well, the first was when I had just started working with you, Steve, actually. We had the McAfee environment, and it was the firewall rules that were set up through it. And I didn't realize when you filter, if you do a check to select the ones you want to get rid of, that in the background, it highlights everything. It doesn't just highlight what you filtered. So I did the check on the filter and then hit delete. And then I removed the filter and just all the firewall rules were just gone. I was like, oh my God, this is my third week here. And I just cleared out our entire AV firewall rule.
How do I not remember this?
Oh, we were all there together. And because I remember I did in the stand up the next day, I told everybody about it. I said, this is what I did to recover, because we had the QA environment, which fortunately was a one-to-one copy. So I just exported it from the McAfee QA and reloaded it into prod. So I got super lucky. But yeah, that was probably in my mind my biggest like, oh my God. And ever since then, like, I am
testing in prod.
It was even testing. Somebody had asked to like remove a specific site they had to get to. So I like filtered for it, did the check on the top, because there was like five or six. I was like, one click as opposed to five or six. Yeah. And then I was like, oh no.
This is why you were vomiting in the office, wasn't it? Yeah. I remember now.
This is why I just ran home that day.
I gotta go.
I thought you were gonna say your biggest mistake was when you used plain text authentication after like telling Jason and I how you didn't need it because you run the internal network. That was the best.
You know what? That's not even fair. You two unplugged my LAN cable from my asset, so I was on Wi-Fi.
Yeah, that's right. We need to do that.
Yes, you two set me up for that through and through.
Well, Joe hasn't heard this story. Maybe we can give Joe a quick rundown of that.
Oh, so I don't remember our camera system, but basically Jason and Steve were trying to get into the camera system, and Jason opens it up and Steve goes, oh no, it's HTTP. Don't log into there. And in my head, I was just like, we're on the internal network. Like, we're fine. Like, yeah, it's HTTP, but we're not.
And it uses our AD creds to log in.
Yeah. So I was like, yeah, we're fine. I was like, if anybody's sniffing the network or anything, we should have known about it by now. So I was like, all right. So I went ahead, logged in, didn't even think twice about it. And then I think like 10 minutes later, I went to the bathroom or something, came back, and Jason just goes, hey, can you log back into that site since you already did and reset my password for it? So I'm like, yeah, sure, why not?
Yeah, it's so easy. There's not even HTTPS. It's so easy. I'll just do it again.
Yeah, it's super easy. It's not a problem. So little did I know that Steve had remoted into my system, started a Wireshark capture, and Jason had unplugged my LAN cable, so I was going across Wi-Fi. And I didn't know any of this, but I didn't think to check because, you know, I trust my team.
As one so, probably should.
First mistake.
Exactly. So I log in, I change Jason's password on the system, and I log out. Don't think anything of it. Go out to lunch, and then I come back, and there is this giant envelope sitting on my desk with my name written across it. And I open the envelope and I'm like, what is this? And I pull it out, and printed on a piece of paper is my password that Steve had gotten from the Wireshark capture.
Somehow immediately you knew it was me.
And put on my desk.
To this day, I can still hear Shane look over. He's like, Steve, I know.
I even had a third party deliver it too. I didn't even tell him what it was. Like, I had it all planned out.
Yes, like it was very well done, but like to this day, like I still think it was the funniest thing, and it's a lesson well learned.
You were very upset because you loved that password.
You did. You put a. I could tell you put a lot of time into it.
Yeah, it was my favorite password, and I was like, well, now I have to change it. I only got to use it for like 2 weeks. It's just when you have a good password in your hand, just like know what to do perfectly every time, and you never mess it up.
It was named after your favorite TV show at the time. It was totally obvious, but yeah, it was
your good. Password was so good, like you were excited. To come into work and use it. You're like, oh, I can't wait.
This one is golden.
So funny. This is going to be a great day today. I'm going to use my new password. Every time I type it in, I get happier and happier.
Yeah. And then Steve just took it all away with HTTP. Ugh. But yeah, so if I could go back and do it all over again, I would say never trust your teammates.
Just so you know, it is now, it was a while ago, but it is now HTTPS. So.
Oh, well, thank God. Now Steve can't capture it.
Can't I?
But I will also say, if anybody getting into cybersecurity, try to always remember to have fun.
That's true.
That is a good point.
It's such a serious field that, like, that was one thing. That is one thing I remember with you guys. Like, we used to get yelled at by other people in the office because we would laugh so hard during the day.
Always told to be quiet. Like, always.
It's like, what are you gonna do? Call security?
Like,
what are you gonna do about a Poindexter? As I say, I think we should save Steve for last.
Yeah, no, definitely. Well, I mean, Joe told us about all the terror. He didn't tell us about what he'd do differently.
Oh,
that is true. Hmm.
I'm guessing it's the opposite of terror, but I don't know.
I guess I would have probably learned like scripting languages earlier on because I got so caught up in like all the other stuff that I was doing. It kind of just like always got put to the back burner, and learning it early on and using it early on would have been really helpful.
Yeah, it definitely comes in handy. For sure.
Yeah, that's a good point too. What I was gonna say specific languages, anything off the top of your head, we're like, man.
Probably Python and Bash, honestly. I think that really like covers most of your bases.
Yeah, I feel like Python's the go.
PowerShell.
Yeah, Python and PowerShell. Yeah, I feel like everybody relies on
Python.
What is Aaron's favorite? Is it Go? He's a big Go guy.
He hasn't liked it, but really Python is the big one these days. PowerShell in some environments, but Python's certainly huge, but I don't know. I find some things in Python. I personally feel like it can be overcomplicated in Python sometimes. Sometimes Bash is a little faster, but I guess it really depends how good you are at the particular language. So, Jason, can you tell us about your origin story?
My origin story. It's pretty similar to Shane's in the sense of falling into security. I always find it's funny. I love to ask people what they went to school for, what they were passionate about, and where they're at now, because it's very rare to find somebody who takes the exact path that they had intended. Like, it's just, they're all over the place. And there's an opportunity they never expected, and it takes them in a completely different career. But it was always IT, and similar to Joe, was a help desk start for a while. Worked with some really great people there. Worked with one terrible person there.
Ooh, tell us about the terrible person. We want to hear about them.
That's a happy hour discussion. Shane knows who it is. He was no bueno.
Maybe I have a whole podcast about that person.
Yeah, if it's who I'm thinking of, yeah, it's terrible.
Tell us your worst day with them.
Jeez,
well, it'll be a giveaway. I think the final the final straw was because I was working in Wooddale at the time, and they knew I lived here in the city, and they had opened a new location here in the Loop, right by the old post office over 290. And this person kept leveraging unnecessarily the carrot of, yeah, once it's open, you're going to, you know, you'll be supporting that site. So it'll be like a 10-minute commute instead of an hour and a half. Like, this is great. Over and over, over and over. Like, this, are you ready to go to Chicago? Yes. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And then on one of our calls, it was like a team call. He announces that somebody else was going to be going to Chicago. Never said anything to me. I'm like, somebody else on my team said something to him. I'm like, you've been telling Jason for months that he's going to be going to Chicago. And he's just like, well, things change.
Wow.
Wow.
That's rough.
So that was kind of the final straw there.
So what lesson did you learn, Jason?
Trust but verify. Does that work there?
That's right. that'll work, man. Trust but verify.
Is that in there? Get it in writing, maybe?
Yeah, there you go. That's a good one, too.
But it's been one of those things where, now that I doubted any of my skills necessarily, but I always thought I was never as good as I needed to be. And people would always come to me and be like, you should apply for this position, you should apply for that position. And so our supervisor is like, hey, there's a physical security supervisor role open. You should apply for it. You know, I applied for that. And, I got the role, but it was under the Windows engineers at the time. And it wound up migrating over to reporting to cybersecurity. And then it was like, well, could I start like cross training with some of you guys on what you're doing? Like, I'll do physical security. And then if you need me to do some grunt work, long story short, it was a little bit of luck, a little bit of just chance. And then I guess having some decent soft skills to be making my way through help desk through physical security to cybersecurity. And similar to Shane as well, you know, I didn't realize cybersecurity was what it was until I was actually over there. You know, when it started over at Talem, it was really nothing more than like legal holds and I guess managing some McAfee stuff. And that was it. Like, that's really all that security consisted of until we finally got a CISO who was great. Finally started getting some tools. And then they took the funding seriously and you know, hiring people, getting us some better tools, helping us automate.
How do you think you got that funding?
We actually had an interim CISO at the time. I can't think of his name off the top of my head. He was from another team. They just sort of said, you know, can you help lead security for a few months? I don't know if you remember who it was, Shane.
Yeah. No, I don't remember. I never even got to meet him.
Yeah. And then we even wound up reporting at some point to the CIO for a little bit while they were interim CISO.
Yep.
But the interim person developed this plan of, this is what we need. This is why we need it. This is our risk. This is how this money is going to address this risk. You know, the stuff that...
The risk base.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's the way to do it. That's how to get the funding.
Yep.
The
risk. Yeah, exactly. And this is a no-brainer kind of presentation. Like, this just makes sense. You know, if this happens, we're going to lose this many millions, or we could just invest a million now, I think was like for a few tools at the moment. I can't remember what the amount was, which that was a lesson learned there as well. But doing things differently, had I known from the start that I wanted to do security, I probably would prefer to start in another area, maybe learning networking, for example, getting some excellent experience in that realm or cloud. I feel like some of the best security engineers didn't start with security. They, like Shane had said, they were some sort of an administrator, and security was just always a common sense thing for them. Like, well, we don't want to leave this open. We don't want to give this permission. Like, they just knew what to do and what not to do, but learned a ton of infrastructure skill to bring with them. And then as they transition over to security and applying more risk, seems like an easier transition. So I think my recommendation would be, what part of security interests you the most, and maybe start there. So my weak point is probably networking. So it would have been that. But you know, some people enjoy, you know, just being a system administrator, Windows, Active Directory, Exchange, you know, whatever it is. I think you can learn some great lessons there and then sort of make your way over to security, given that people have the ability to do whatever they want. Like, I'm ready for security, and then they can just get a security role. You know, obviously it's not that easy. Like, you know, you don't,
I'm ready, just hire me.
Yeah, it just happens. But I think it's good to get that sort of experience under your belt. And Shane made a great point with, you know, some of these conferences and expos, you know, networking, working with people, building relationships goes such a long way.
How do you network, for those of us that don't know? How does that work?
Honestly, it's just starting conversation and talking to people and showing genuine interest in what they're doing, how they do it. I hate talking about myself, but I love hearing people talk about themselves and where they've been and what they've done. It's way more interesting to me. So that's my way of networking, is learning more about other people. And then, you know, other people kind of, maybe they find that appealing.
Most people do love talking about themselves. So it sounds like you know what you're doing, Jason. It's almost like this is targeted.
It's a perfect match. I hate talking about myself, but I love listening to other people talk about themselves. So have at it. Just go with it.
Man, maybe you should like host a podcast or something. Jeez.
I know, right? God. And even internally, like, you know, it's not necessarily called networking, but building relationships within, you know, company. Just security spends most of their time asking people to do things.
It's true.
You know, obviously there's a lot we do on our side, but we're always asking stuff of other teams. And so building those relationships, I think, goes a really long way.
That's a really good point. And it's really tricky because if you can build up the rapport enough that you ask and it gets done, that's what you want. But when it gets to the point where people aren't doing stuff and you need it to be done, there's a very delicate way to do it, right?
Yeah.
And it eventually gets to the point where you're telling them to do it. But really, it's like, just go to the manager, explain to them. But like, you definitely don't want to contentious relationship with other folks at the company when you're in security. So it can be very tricky.
Yeah, and I don't want it to sound fake either, in a sense of like, I'm only going to talk to this person because I know I'm going to need something from them later. I think most people can tell when you just don't really give a shit about them. You're more interested in yourself. But genuinely having an interest in other people, helping them just because they need help, you know, it goes a long way.
Very true. Very true.
So last but not least, Mr. Stonebreaker.
Oh, I guess I could tell you my origin story.
Yes.
So really I think I was on the bus in eighth grade. And someone's like, have you heard of America Online? And I had not. And they gave me a 3.5-inch floppy disk for our listeners that don't know what floppy disks are, they were kind of like the USB drives of the 90s. And on the disk was an installer for America Online, which was how you used to get on the internet back then. It wasn't where everyone was just always online all the time. You actually had to use a modem and you would dial into this thing. And it had a chat room and a few other features. But the second disk this individual gave me was something called AOHEL, which stood for American Online Hell. And this was a Visual Basic program that would wreak havoc in chat rooms. It would scroll lots of text in chat rooms. You could fish. And this is actually where the term phishing came from. This is where phishing was born. And I used to fish the new user chat rooms. So I would fish everyone in the chat room, like all 23 people. And usually about half of them would give me their password. And I thought it was hilarious because, you know, I didn't know any better. I was in eighth grade. And so I just had hundreds and hundreds of passwords. That's why I stayed online, because you would only get 30 days for free. So you had to get other people's passwords to stay online. That was kind of the trick back then. But eventually I got into wanting to make my own programs, and I learned how to decompile programs. So I started decompiling because people started making kind of like newer versions of AOL, but they would brand it however they wanted to. So I started decompiling them, learning Windows API calls, modifying AOL. And I didn't really realize it, but I was pretty much doing what I ended up doing, you know, decades later in my career. But I was on the other side of it, where I was fighting malware, decompiling malware. And so it's kind of funny. But eventually I got in trouble and I got grounded from the internet and I got a life. And I didn't really think about it for quite a long time. So I graduated college and I was in a job I hated. I was manually calculating people's pension benefits. Ugh. And I like got put in a performance improvement plan and I hated my life. I was working like 80-hour weeks. Ugh. Like Joe. Just, you know, getting shitted on by the corporate powers that be. And my wife's like, you got to get out of there. You got to find another job. And luckily I actually got a job at AOL after that. of all places, AOL hired me and I was doing QA for them. It's funny. I ended up automating their system, which is exactly what I was doing back in the 90s. And I was automating account creation and stuff for an online music website that's now defunct. So my job was to download music all day on their music platform and burn CDs and Winamp. And it was great. I loved it. That's back when there was something called digital rights management, DRM. So I also got to test the digital rights management stuff, which is kind of funny. DRM is making a comeback nowadays. From there, I went into systems engineering and I started managing like web servers and database servers. And one day someone's like, hey, there's a problem with the SQL server. So I go down to the server room and I check it out and all the processes are misspelled on the SQL server. I'm like, that's really weird. And then I looked at our Subversion server. It's kind of like Get. And there's Tomcat on it. And there's a web page where you can browse our Subversion repositories, which was really strange. I'd never seen that. And it was all in Chinese. So I realized we had gotten hacked. And I didn't know how or why. And I'm extremely curious. And that's what took me on my cybersecurity journey and why I went to get my master's. Because I didn't know why we got hacked. I had to know why we got hacked and how to stop it. And so that's how I got into cybersecurity. You know, from there, I went from systems to learning stuff about networking and DevOps and all that. And eventually, once I got my master's, I could finally make the real leap over to information security. So if I could do it over, I would have immediately started with help desk and gotten directly into technology, as opposed to screwing around being a business analyst and hating life and going to QA and stuff. It was kind of nice, though, to get kind of a well-rounded look at different departments and stuff. But I think I could have gotten security a lot faster if I would have gone straight to the help desk. So that's what I wish I would have done.
Yeah. And, you know, as you mentioning that, I kind of thought a help desk is a good place to start because one, you see a little bit of everything. Like everybody has these different issues and it helps teach you how to work with people and deal with people. I think that's a skill that needs to be practiced. And that comes in handy, I think, almost in any career, to be quite honest.
Yeah, definitely. One of the books that helped me the most was How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. And it talks about exactly what you said, Jason. Taking a genuine interest in other people is really one of the best ways to build trust with them and to get them on your side. And also just finding out what other people want, like what they need, and then finding out a way to give that to them. So if you can help someone out with the problem they're having, or take an interest in their project, or find out how the goals of your team align with the goals of another team, you'll find out really fast how influential you can be in a company. And that's really, really the way to do it. It's saying it's not my job and stuff is not a way to build influence in a company.
No.
To that point as well, one of the things, especially for anybody new who's kind of listening to this and looking at getting their career kickstarted, whenever you get that ServiceNow ticket and it's clearly not something related to your team and it's easy to just say, not my problem, it's never a bad thing to kind of invest a little bit of time to try and help them, because you never know when you might need that person's help in the future.
Or they might be your boss in the future.
Exactly. You never know. Like, so often I find that I'll be working a ticket. I'm like, not my problem. And I'm like, you know what? This ticket's been bounced like 5 different teams. Let me at least see if I can't figure out to help point them in the right direction. I always find that it's never a bad thing if you've got the time to help out where you can. Like, that's usually always been like what I always say to people. It's like, I'm happy to help wherever I can, as long as I've got the cycles to go through everything that I need to.
Yeah. And even if you can't help somebody immediately, it's, hey, listen, you know what? If you want to schedule some time later today, we can maybe go over it, sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely. So, Joe, what were we going to say about TransUnion?
I had to learn how to win over, you know, the hearts and minds of basically my victims, because, you know, no one wanted my solution deployed in the environment. I didn't want my solution deployed in the environment, but I had to do it, you know. And I needed a lot of help from other teams. Like, when my database would go down or my database wouldn't be acting right, I need my database guy to get on the call, and I need my good one to get on the call and tell me what the hell's going on, so I could go back to the vendor, because the vendor can't really provide the service or the intellect that I need, just to be honest, you know? Yeah, it was interesting. A lot of beers were bought. A lot of lunches were bought, you know, for other people that I didn't think that I'd be working with them, you know, day one. And then here I am 2 months in, and it's like, all right, what's your favorite beer? I'll go over to Benny's right now. I'll go get you a 6-pack of whatever you want, and we'll start working on this. I'm very sorry. Oh, it's 8 p.m. Let me send you a pizza.
Yeah, that's a good point. Food and booze go such a long way.
Yeah, I mean, there was one time when I was doing an upgrade on the product, and the upgrade just went to shit like 5 minutes in. Five minutes in, it was probably the worst upgrade that you could imagine. Everything was going wrong. And I had to, you know, have a support engineer from the vendor's support team. I had to have him on the call the entire day, and he wasn't even on call. The guy that was on call wasn't picking up. And like, I had his direct number. and that guy wasn't picking up, and I think that he ended up getting fired or something, you know. So this other guy that wasn't planning to do work on that day, like, he was planning on spending it with his family, I'm like, all right, I'm buying you lunch, I'm buying you dinner, I'm buying you snacks in between, what alcohol would you like? Like, everything, because I can't do anything. Like, I can't do anything without him, because I, like, I'm not a DBA and I don't know the back end of his product like that. Nor should I, right? Like, it was crazy. But learning to do stuff like that really helps.
That's a good quality too, that genuine appreciation for stuff as well. I try to buy people food, just, you know, when they go out of their way to help you out, and you know that they're dropping something else to help you out, I like to try and show some sort of appreciation, usually in the form of tacos.
Yeah, I mean, like, I've been on the other end of it, right? Like, where it's like you're going above and beyond. You know you're going above and beyond. You don't really expect anything from it. Like, I worked for 48 hours straight at one of those sites that I mentioned earlier, right? Like, 48 hours straight. No breaks, no food. There was no going outside for a breather. It was 48 hours straight. At the end of it, I was hallucinating, and I had to have a special agent drive me to my hotel so that I could get there safely. And the hotel was right down the street, mind you. Like, yeah, they were like, nah, you probably can't drive. I'm like, what? Like, I didn't even think that they were real. Like, it was weird. Just not seeing sunlight in 48 hours is very weird.
Just hallucinating. It's like Vegas.
Yeah, it's very similar to that.
Well, Steve, are you, I guess the real question is, how do we close these out?
Oh, are you trying to leave, Jason?
No, well, I do have
you,
one.
You need to go get some COVID and give it to some people. Is that what's going on?
Jeez. I do need to get my dose. I do need to get my dose of Delta.
As I say, are you off to your Delta concert?
I'm off to my Delta concert, and
you've got a Delta date with Lollapalooza.
I have it in writing that Shane says he can't take more than an hour of me. Otherwise, there's some sort of compensation that happens, and I don't want to breach our agreement.
He's QAing the three vaccines.
I have to spit into a petri dish when I'm done. It's no big deal. On that note, how long do I have to quarantine after? Do I have to do the 10 days?
At least 28 days.
I assume, yeah. If you're just going to collect them all, yeah, minimum a month.
So I won't be coming in the office this week. For everybody's sake.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. Well, I hope you have fun at your concert, Jason.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for coming on the podcast today. I hope our listeners learned a few things, and we'll hopefully have some of these guests back.
Hell yeah.
Any final words of wisdom, anyone?
Shane, what do you got for us?
Don't steal your colleagues' passwords when you set them up after they try to do something nice for you.
That is the worst advice. You should always steal your colleagues' passwords and let them know how vulnerable they are.
If it's easily obtainable, it's your right to steal it.
In all honesty, one of the best things I think I could say to somebody start off is genuinely try to remember to have fun with your colleagues. Because like when you don't have fun, you don't enjoy it, it makes this career that we love so much harder when it shouldn't be. Try to build camaraderie with your team and trust is it's so important. And truly, truly having fun is the core of it in my mind. Like when I worked at Guaranteed Rate with you guys, like it was every day I looked forward to coming into the office. Every day I looked forward to working with you guys and doing the job. Some days we would be working there till 9 o'clock, and it was great because like we would laugh, we'd have a good time. But like, honestly, like I think that's one of the most important things, like constant training, constant learning, but remember to have fun when you can. Like it's a serious field, but enjoy the time when you can have it.
If this podcast is going to be about how amazing I am, I could do this every day.
Except COVID days, right?
Yeah. When I'm in bed because of Delta, I'll think back to this.
Oh man, you know what? We'll have a whole separate podcast for that. I'll call you every day and you can just talk about how awful you feel.
Jason's health update.
Tell us whether or not Lollapalooza was actually worth it.
My Whoop band. I'll let you know how my heart rate variability is while for the next 10 days.
Recovery percentage is just going to be zero for like 2 weeks straight.
And I wasn't even drinking much at all. My recovery after the Friday Foo Fighters was 1%.
Foo Fighters!
Foo Fighters! Ladies and gentlemen, Foo Fighters! All right.
Any final words of wisdom, Joe?
Just keep going. It's going to be hard, but it's a worthy journey, I think, hopefully.
Mine is trust but verify. And I think Joe and Jason and Shane know that this is an edict for me. Every day, man, trust but verify. Because half the time when security asks something to be done, maybe more than half, it is done wrong. So you need to verify that it's actually done correctly. And sure. It's not the fault. Usually not. I think there's something called, what is it? There's malfeasance, right? And then there's like, what's the other one? Like misfeasance. But basically, people don't, in general, do something wrong on purpose. Even if you're clear about it, they may not just understand it fully. So verify that what the security team needs is actually getting done. So I think that'll certainly get your security program in a better place. And then, yeah, exactly what Jason said. Take an interest in other people and learn to build bridges with other teams.
Yeah, I agree.
Jason, do you have anything to say before you go off?
Man, trust but verify really is, it's a big one. I guess also something I try and follow is it's not perfection, it's progression, just improvements. You're going to make mistakes. Just learn from them and get better.
Own up to them quickly.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, just this was me. I did this. I'm sorry. How do I not do this again?
Yeah, I took down prod. It was me. It happens.
Yeah, it saves so much time and money.
Okay, well, thank you, everyone. I appreciate you taking time
to
be here
today.
For sure.
Good to see everybody. Yeah, it was a good chat, Joe. Snickerdoodle. I'll talk to you later. All right, guys.
All right, have a good one. Thanks for being a guest today, Joe. Do you have any interesting upcoming guests on your podcast?
Yeah, of course. So I do have a lot of different guests that are going to be coming on my podcast pretty soon. I think that they're all pretty interesting. One of those people that will be coming on in the near future, we still have a bit of planning to do, but when it does happen, it will be the hacker that allegedly hacked a flight that he was on and other passengers were on, and allegedly, you know, changed the speed of the plane or turned the plane or something like that. So we're going to be talking about that. His name is Chris Roberts. It'll be a really fun, interesting podcast. So I'm really excited for that one.